This goes back to Mr. Bezos. Your margin is my opportunity.
With quick commerce, with Amazon, with Flipkart, brands are losing 25 to 40% of their revenue. The Google tax and Meta tax is not the way to think of how I acquire my customers.
How do you keep control on your costs? What we call the kitne aadmi the problem.
Cheese jo aapne nahi jaldi early bola tha ye rosi. And he used the word rosi ne rula diya.
Hi all, welcome to the Zero to Infinity podcast. We've got the usual suspects, Avnish, Avi, founder and managing partner Z47. We've got Chandrasekhar, CV, leads all things consumer and consumer tech at the fund. We are going to do something really interesting today. Let me set some context. A few days back, we organized an event in Gurgaon. We had 100 founders, operators come together. We'd set up a panel discussion between some of the best consumer tech founders in India. We had Varun, co-founder CEO of Mamaearth. We had Abhiraj from Urban Company. We had Revan from Mosaic Wellness, brands like Man Matters, Be Body Wise, etc. And we had our home team expert, Avish, who was the founder of the original internet company, Badi.com, back in the days. It was a great event. We heard great rave reviews, no biases whatsoever. And we thought, why don't we sit down and distill and reflect some of the learnings that we got from that event. Let me kick this off with CV. CV, do you want to talk about the event, the format, the experiment that we tried?
So actually two reasons why we chose a different format for the event. One, I had an incredibly tough job to moderate these four people on the panel. And honestly, it was a little unnerving. Second is, I think partly we used to keep going for these panel events and we keep getting stuck at, oh, what's the opportunity? Oh, India rising. Oh, everything's up and to the right. Why aren't you building, right? And it wasn't really going into the depths of what does it actually feel like to build? Like, what are the decisions? What are the strategic choices you're making on a monthly, daily, quarterly basis that's changing the trajectory of your company? So to make the discussion slightly more productive, given we have exceptional founders on the panel, yourself included with Baji, the plan was to now ask targeted questions to say, can we split down in each part of the P&L? What have you done differently? How would you think differently as you were to build out your company and how that moves forward as we look at what's happening in India? Right? So the four main sort of subparts we had was revenue. But the revenue part of the P&L wasn't simply to say, ki kya price pe price karo, right? It was to say, what is the market you're going after? Is there a new category? Is there an existing category? How should you look at products versus services? How should you pick the market you want to play in? The reframe around gross margin, and typically when you ask a founder, and this includes me when I was building as well, if somebody were to ask, gross margin mein kya plan hai? I used to end it as, this is my COGS and this is my future COGS. If I were to ask myself to step back, I think the right question now to have asked is, what part of it am I building? And what part of it am I buying? And I think that's the level of reframe that we wanted to do for each of these questions, right? So then CM1, CM2, CM3 will now get reframed to not contribution margin. It will be, what channel are you choosing to build? Are you building your own channel? Are you working on a marketplace? How do you handle a marketplace? And the question around EBITDA and profits now suddenly is not about, oh, you know, I'll take this S&A cost out of here. I'll relocate my office. This is my tech cost. It changes to, what is the ROCE profile of a business going to look like? How much cash do you need to make it burn? And at the end of the day, how much ownership do you have in your company at the time there is an exit opportunity, right? So that was the sort of structure that we went ahead with. We loved it, got great reviews like what Kishan's saying. We'll probably continue with that this year as well.
Hopefully we live up to our reputation as operator builders, right? We market ourselves as operator builders, so...
Absolutely. No pressure at all. But I think it does put us in a unique vantage point to at least capture some of these points around. So we'll be peppering in a bit of what we heard from these esteemed panelists in the podcast, along with some more views as we go deeper on each of these points.
Right. So essentially a P&L will become a reframe of what are the strategic choices you make at each part of the P&L. And both of you have been founders yourself. So I'll keep putting you in the hot seat and say, this part of the P&L, what choices do you make based on where we are today? So again, as everybody knows, P&L starts with revenue. So let's talk about what the revenue reframe was, right? We reframed revenue as three parts. Number one, which is every VCs, I think day one of VCs where they train you to ask this question, which is TAM kya hai? That's question number one. TAM kya hai? But there's a lot more lurking underneath. It's more about how do you choose the constraints in which your business really operates, right? There's of course the question of, is this a market creation bet or are you trying to take market share from an incumbent by just offering something better, right? There's the debate on India versus Bharat, which is the premiumization and penetration opportunity. We've covered a lot of that in different podcasts as well. And then there's the, particularly for consumer founders, how to think of TAM. It's a single brand, multiple brand, or house of brands, as we call it. That was the broader revenue reframing, right? Abhi, I want to get you in. We've talked about premiumization, a lot of these questions on revenue. How do you see that revenue strategic decision today?
Let me ask you this. What was the TAM of ride hailing in 2011, 2012 in India?
I think some VC would have put Meru, Mega, Revenues, all the those call centers, a really broken experience. The TAM must be negligible. 10, 20, 50 million.
Some VC, matlab, hum log hi kar rahe the. Our exit case for Ola was like $100 million. Right. So therein lies the point. Therein lies the point, which is, and I want to go back to the framing that you guys mentioned, which is we in the other podcast are speaking about trends. That's the what. And this is about the how. But, you know, line item by line item, we'll maybe spend 5 minutes on each. But don't forget the what and the how. And the how, obviously, many people can get trained to do, but keeping the what in mind is very important. So, you know, you have a chart from that, the presentation that you mentioned. It's in front of me. You should attach it.
Okay.
But it basically, and again, in the other podcast, we have spoken about GDP per capita. Actually, it's not rocket science as to which categories get created or which explode. And if you go deeper, who's a consumer? It's a human being. It's a well-known tenet in psychology, the Maslow's hierarchy. Essentially, as you're getting richer, you're going up in the Maslow's hierarchy. All the sectors that you put here are basically higher in the Maslow's hierarchy, right? So you get away from roti, kapda, makan and you start doing a bunch of things. So there are many things here. I think we can put it out there. But I think the unique thing which came from that trends discussion was the number of why nows that are all happening at the same time. And it's the first time in my life where I think that we talk about TAM, then we talk about SAM, which is serviceable addressable market. Then we talk about SOM, which is serviceable obtainable market. TAM is obviously the largest of it. But if you talk about ride hailing, you would have gotten it wrong, right? Whereas if you thought about it as everybody who is riding a car or taking public transportation, you would have. So there is a serious reframing that can happen. What I want to encourage founders is think about all the trends of premiumization, AI, everything we have spoken about, quick commerce. Think about all the trends and reimagine your market. The obtainable piece of it might actually have exploded with things like AI, right? The serviceable piece of it might explode. So obviously the TAM of chocolates in India is great. What are you going to do about it? Can you launch personalized chocolates with AI? Can somebody create their own, right? So I just think I want to make people, and maybe you can pick up from here in market creation and market share. I think this is the time to think both. Because there are many why-nows.
Yeah. Truly the time to think both. So going back to the chart that we had mentioned, right? If you look at what is this chart? It's basically saying, where's Brazil versus India in per capita multiple? Where's China versus India for each of these sort of subcategories, if you will? Overall, you have a number that's somewhere bottom to the bottom of the table. But if you look at the top, leisure, recreation, hotels, catering, durables, housing, these are not sectors that have seen a lot of value creation yet in India. Not a lot of startups can come out and claim, hey, you know what? Durables. I've cracked durables. Here's my large company of durables. And hence, some of these TAMs are opening up. While I was moderating the panel, interestingly, I had sort of put this question and I had expected a sort of a detailed discussion from the founders on, you know, this is how I looked at my market, this is how I didn't. What stayed with me was some of the comments. So, Varun, for example, mentioned, market creation kya hota hai? Everything is market share. So he reframed the entire problem of what is market creation into a market share problem. So in his mind, all the sort of luxury or high efficacy beauty products that you're using out of a tube now is actually the market share that you're taking away from a salon. Right? You used to go to a salon for a hair treatment or a dermatology treatment, etc. And now that's coming packaged in the form of a niacinamide tube or a snail mucin or whatever. Right? So I think that was really interesting on how you mentioned to say, don't look at your direct competitors just by looking at the large FMCG brands in his case. Right? Look at all the services through which these sort of outcomes are being rendered. And that allows you to reframe the market creation opportunity as a market share opportunity. Interestingly enough, founders generally don't agree. So Bahal had a very different perspective to say market creation is the most exciting part of building in India. And especially as a young founder, you can look at a problem, find out an answer that nobody else has thought of. And nobody else has figured out this reframes to a certain market. I pushed him back, if you remember, in the event. And I said, but how do you go about market creation? And he said, CV, it's just trial and error. There is no magic around this, right? And that's something that, especially some of these younger founders that we're trying to go after, really big TAMs are sort of unlocking. So I think that was my biggest takeaway around revenue, to say, we typically do like a top-down analysis and say, this is the jewelry market in India. This is the total apparel market in India. Such a large market. The way to look at it is to say, what's going to change in the next 10 years? And as a founder, what excites you to build?
You know, you said something, I wrote it down because it actually, and we don't know the answers, but I think it is just giving ideas on reimagination. So when you said products and services will merge, or, you know, hair cutting experience, salon at home versus salon out, what are you doing? It's experiences.
Right. Yeah.
And should we be thinking about experience share and reimagine experience? One of the things we discussed, and I know we'll come back to it in QCOM, it reimagined an experience. There was a Kirana experience, which actually was pretty convenient for people. Yeah. And that's what modern trade got wrong in India, right? So I do think this experiences may be a, and then of course my favorite topic of AI will come in, because experiences can go on steroids with AI.
So there you have it. That's how you should think of revenue. Reframe it more as the opportunity that you're going after, and you'll have a lot more clarity. Should we move to gross margin?
Yeah.
And one of the most important parts of the P&L, and like CV said, it's always had that price minus COGS nuance, you know, which lever to pull. But there are three ways sort of we tried and reframed it. Number one is, how do you choose your gross margin? Are gross margins a static choice? And once you choose them, they stay there. We put a chart there, and we looked at the gross margins of all listed FMCG, durables, footwear, apparel players. And turns out gross margins do change.
I hate that data. I had already written down they are very hard to change. And then I saw the data and I had to change my view.
Indeed. I think you just look at those gross margins and you go back to transcripts of quarterly calls or just listen to the quarterly earnings calls. You will think somebody like a Unilever going after multiple India opportunities, also doing sachetization, low unit packs to anchor on the penetration opportunity, but also thinking what should be my product mix to anchor, or what acquisition should I go after, especially considering minimalist now. Like, how do I think of my gross margin? Is it premiumization and change the mix to drive gross margin? So there you have it. Gross margins do change. The second reframe we had was in the gross margin part of the P&L. What do I build? What do I keep in-house? And what do I buy? And we'll unpack some of it. And the third one was, how do I think of that product and service divide that sort of adds on that layer of experience that you're talking about, Avi, that gives me that extra basis points of gross margin.
Yeah. No, but let me ask you this. Why bother? Why, if I could sell something at 20-30% GM versus 70% GM and sell a lot more of it, why should I bother with gross margin?
Yeah, I think because there's the couple of other levers on P&L remaining, right? Like, if you have enough meat in your gross margin, you can deploy that to acquire a customer. You can deploy that to offer them that better experience. You can deploy that in all the other parts of running your business.
So this is very key. And because honestly, I have been asked this question. Now, Warren Buffett, he's well known for saying, I will not invest in something that is less than 40% gross margin. And what you just said, ultimately, business building is risky. One of the ways of de-risking your business, there are two ways. One is three ways. Is the obviously all the business building you do, but financially speaking, your P&L, your balance sheet, and ultimately your cash flow. That's right. this is a very important lever of de-risking your business. It also gives you, for me, in a consumer business, a real sense of, am I adding value? You know, 20-30% in India, mein to trading ho jati hai 15-20%, right? So, I think it's very important for that reason. Theoretically speaking, many entrepreneurs would have learned at some stage in finance, you know, a kirana store maybe have 10-15% gross margin, but what, maybe 20 asset turns? Yeah. So, you know, you can turn your asset. What happens in a recession? Asset don't turn, you get bogged down. So, understanding that gross margin gives you two very important things. Your real value to the customer. And second, a very important lever of de-risking your business. So, which is why I think it's very important. Let CV chime in. I think Ashish of business said this very well to me once. We're talking about acquisitions and, you know, historically, although now I've seen many counter examples, historically, acquisitions were meant to fail, right? 80-90% some statistic. But people forget that some of the highest value creation, just on a slight digression, is acquisition. YouTube, Instagram, it's almost $1 trillion of value, which probably makes up for everything else, right? But he made a very important statement. He said, I will buy margin, not revenue. Okay. So what does that mean? And it was for a very nuanced point of view. His view was, if I'm buying margin, whether I'm forward integrating or backward integrating, I'm working with somebody who's in my value chain.
Yeah.
If I'm buying revenue, I'm buying somebody who's competition to me or potentially complementary. But the cultural integration won't happen, which I thought was very insightful. I would buy margin. You can even buy gross margin by, you know, going, but generally it always comes with economies of scale. But that's what I would focus on. To me, a business I would start, I would want to see a business with 50% plus long term. I was surprised with the data you showed that, you know, gross margins can be improved. Some of it in manufacturing kind of world seems natural. In thin stack businesses seems natural. In this seemed unnatural to me, but I do think it's a very critical driver. And my red line would be 50%.
That's a great way to think of it. I also think it is sometimes the laziest answer, especially when you start ideating about your startup, right? So a lot of founders, myself included, we look at the opportunity in the customer trend and look at the 10x and then we say, is there a why now, etc. here, right? I would actually make the argument to say that gross margins are potentially as important or if not more important decision to choose upfront. And why do I make that argument? A higher gross margin, like Kishan mentioned, translates downwards on your P&L. You can now suddenly acquire customers a lot more. You can create your own channel. You can spend on tech. So you could afford to go directly to the customer, which changes your contribution margin. Second, it allows for a moat because you are effectively then creating a price point that potentially cannot exist in the market apart from you. And this has created large businesses. And hence, this build versus buy question, reframing of gross margin, especially at the start of your company, I think is a more useful metric than saying mera COGS itna hai and this is how my COGS will come down over time. And I think that's a decision most people default into, to say ye khareed leta hun aur bech deta hun, versus can you be more strategic and build a moat around it, is how I sort of reframe that. Very quickly, before we jump on to contribution margin, let's look at how to increase gross margin. The answers are very clear. There's a lot of vertical integration answers. There's Lenskart, Country Delight, Decathlon, Ola Electric. There's private labels as an answer. Yeah. This is everybody from Myntra, any horizontal network or marketplace has to eventually do their private label. Two interesting points, however, is cornering supply and servitization, right? And if you look at it, servitization in some form, are we taking your point, is actually adding gross margin by forward integrating, right? We're basically saying, I'm not just selling the product. Let me add a service on top of it and capture the margin that's currently going through services as well. And I think that adds to Ashish's point to say, what can you add to the P&L that's accretive? Cornering supply is quite interesting. It comes back to, you know, for brands, you typically look at, can I build a factory? And that's vertical integration. For consumer tech, my push here would be, can you corner supply? Can you create supply? Are you the first port of call for any supplier to list their services? Are they ready to give you an inordinate share of their time and hence allow you to curate a supply that is best in class? Right? And all of this directly impacts your COGS. So I'd be a lot more mindful about that if I was coming up now.
I think you framed it really well. You know what we were saying, it gives you what you were also saying. Essentially, it gives you more money to play with in the rest of your P&L.
Yeah.
So it just gives you more degrees of freedom. Yeah. Coming back to this, actually, we didn't hit it as much in the other podcast on this cornering supply. You know, all of us were looking at the market cap of Luxottica, 170 billion. I think we were all taken aback. And then we said, maybe Lenskart is undervalued, right? So we have not grown up other than seeing the Reliances of the world, you know, grown up around very large manufacturing businesses. And there is a big why now there also with the government push, BIS coming in, all of that stuff. So it's not just for margin. It's a huge strategic advantage for you to go. I would probably go back end first. If I had to do it, I would go back end first.
Yeah, makes sense. I think Revanth had this wonderful point on when we were thinking through the levers, and he said, look, price increase in the short run might buy you 4, 5, 10 percentage points of gross margin, but in long run, it doesn't build moats. And this is the cornering supply bit where long-term moats get created and it shows up in gross margin. All right, let's move to the next line item, which is contribution margin. This is CM1, CM2, CM3, which I think us VCs annoy the founders with most. CM2 kya hai? CM2 profitable hue ki nahi? So let's get into contribution margin, which is then essentially how to think through channels, right? We reframed this as with the assertion saying not all revenues are equal. Revenues on your own channel versus a third-party channel which is run by platforms who have their own P&Ls to run, not all revenues are equal. So essentially three reframes. One is, what is your channel cross-category mix? How do you in this, number two, how do you in this age of multi-channel own your and curate your own destiny, control your own destiny? And number three, which is, how do you acquire customers, especially in the land of Google, Meta, tax, and that same spinning wheel of acquire through Google and Meta.
To perf or not to perf. That is the question. Let's do it in the order that you mentioned. But I want to bring across a point, right? I think India is still discovering what contribution margins are.
Yeah.
And why do I say that? Rajendra had done a big analysis on US companies versus India companies. And these are public companies, right? And we figured out counterintuitively, that there's a lot more margin as a percentage accruing to the Indian companies. And we were sort of debating internally why. One of the answers is obviously India has this aggregation of power in some form. And you can sort of, if you have the power, you can keep aggregating.
And Jugaad and frugal engineering.
Absolutely. That was the other way to put it. But the second part, interestingly also, is our distribution channels have always been fragmented.
Yeah.
And that allows for, the brand to get some margin power, capture. Some margin capture. Now I'm actually going to make the reverse point. With quick commerce, with Amazon, with Flipkart, brands are losing 25 to 40% of their revenue. In a country where, yes, we will get there, but right now we don't have crazy upward wallet propensity to spend. And hence, the question here that we posed to the founders that day was, what is going to happen to this 30, 40% margin? Are you going to get it from the customer? Are you going to get it from the, are the marketplaces going to get efficient? Interestingly, the answers we received, I think, from both Abhiraj and Varun were, and including Revanth, was a marketplace, if they do have inordinate control on supply, will charge the extra 5, 10% and they will get away with it. So the question here as a brand is to say, how can you, certainly comes back to gross margin and controlling supply. Yeah. But how do you ensure that your business can now flywheel on that thinner contribution margin?
No, but there's a, as you were speaking, I was also thinking, if you were to say one of the other things we missed in this whole QCOM thing was other than the willingness of the customer to pay, the addiction, the fact that it is cheaper, it's more convenient than Kirana stores, was the margin structure. So what is the margin structure of the large FMCG companies to distributors?
It's nothing. If you are natural, you can get away from 8 to 18%.
Yeah, 12%.
The 12%. What is the margin in the retailer level?
Retailer level, somewhere maybe double that, 20-odd percent.
10 to 15%.
So somewhere around 20%, it sounds to me, if this QCOM people were to charge, then they have a sustainable business.
Yeah.
That's what they should be charging. I think they're making a mistake.
The QuickCom place?
Yeah.
Ah, interesting.
I think they're making a mistake. This goes back to Mr. Bezos. Your margin is my opportunity. I wouldn't be surprised if Amazon and some of these guys, when they launch QCOM, will actually crash. If I was running this business, I would say, what you were just saying, HUL and all these guys, they're not going to sit idle.
Yeah.
They are going to then create alternate channels. They will help an Amazon. They'll help a Flipkart, right? So, separate point. But I think, therefore, QCOM is obviously big new channel. I think, again, I am always in the reimagination mode. Can you reimagine, therefore, what categories can exist now that couldn't exist before?
Yeah.
Right? And we have discussed ice cream in that. You know, ice cream was always a walk-in.
All foods, sir. Yeah. ID's taken, what, 15, 18 years to get to the scale that they are. All foods companies stuck in the 200 to 300 ASP range.
So, you know, there are many foodies around and many of us have sadly also invested in QSRs and not made money. So, one of the big theses we have, and again, encouraging founders, is digital QSR. Right? Digital QSR has no... All you need is great food.
Right? Absolutely.
So, coming back, I think the... you were going P&L by P&L, you said CMs are not well understood in India. Some are actually cheaper. We actually skipped technically CM1, which sometimes has logistics.
Absolutely.
But in the previous one, you said in the previous podcast that we seem to have nailed it better than anyone else in the world. The fact that we don't have to discuss this, the fact that we don't have to say payment modes are a problem because UPI is... you know, Meesho has brought all its deliveries in-house. It's a solved problem.
Yeah.
And I think founders should realize that that's a BFD.
Yeah. Right?
That payments and logistics and all of that, there are enough blueprints out there. And therefore, one can actually move to distribution and talk about the other thing.
Yeah. And distribution is, and coincidentally, that's the next point as well.
Yeah.
How do you distribute? Can you acquire the customer yourself? Can you use the channel yourself? I think the answer is a vehement, if you can, please do.
Yeah.
If your P&L allows and your category allows for you to acquire the customer directly, this could be an experience store, this could be an app, this could be your own set of GTM doctor channel. You decide what it is. But if you can control your destiny on the front end, by that I mean own the customer, you are bound to see retentions that are just going to flywheel your business.
Country Delight, great example. Mosaic is doing it online.
Absolutely. So that's an easier answer. So reframe, the easiest answer is I want to own the customer and I want to own the backend. Beautiful P&L, right? I think the part that requires solving is the to perf or not to perf question. It's just the Google tax and Meta tax is not the way to think of how I acquire my customers. I think the part in the panel where I was, that set context for me was, hey, at the time, Varun was building, the why now was an Amazon. The why now was that you can now market on a Meta, right? And they were able to acquire customers for much cheaper. That's not the case anymore.
Yeah.
It's super expensive. And hence, this is a push. We'll put the chart out to say how ad spends are moving, but it's moving to Google Meta, that may move to Amazon, Meesho, etc. But the reframe here is, can you find a different way to acquire a customer? Yeah. What is a PLG? What is a word of mouth? And what is the retention?
And let's go back to our example from the previous one and let's just do a role play. So you want to book travel.
Yeah.
Walk me through your utopian travel experience. Travel planning and booking experience.
I think in the ideal world, I drop in a text or a voice note or call saying, hey, I'm thinking of, let's say this is not work travel, this is leisure travel. Hey, I'm thinking about a nice, secluded vacation somewhere in the Northeast. Can you figure something out? My dates are this and this, or rough dates are this and this. And then I forget about it.
You may add, by the way, to that. You know my social profile. Here are the people whose tastes I like.
Yeah.
Let's say you do, right?
Absolutely.
Then what happens?
I think in the utopian world, that entity, let's not call it an agent or a human, but goes and figures out, hey, this is the last 10 travel records of how Kishan has liked its stay. This is how he's rated. History, this is how friends, peers, etc. typically stay. So we know these kind of properties work. This is how it probably commute. So hence the flight, the taxi. Like I'm maybe going on a limb here and trying to say everything is everything is done by entity, but this is what utopian looks like. I don't think about it.
Within 2 years, yeah. This is coming. Yeah. Who's building it?
Yeah.
It's coming within 2 years. So to your point on viral PLG, it would have sound whacked out a few years ago, right? I don't think, you know, and just speaking of just how lateral, I was very impressed. I met a friend of mine, his son, studying, doing his business, undergrad business in the US. And he said, you know, Avi uncle, I want to run an idea by you. I'm like, okay. So he wants to build an air purifier, aesthetic lighting or artwork, and a music system all in one. I should think about the why now. Who else in the world will be building air purifiers? India may be impure to bari baat hai. Right? So you'll be building it here. Yeah. Half the time you're saying Alexa or Siri or a lot of people, I say, do this, do that, automation. You have, so his idea came from coming back to India from the US, seeing a beautiful house with, let's say, very expensive stuff and a dirty air purifier sitting in the center.
Yeah.
So anything can happen. Yeah. And with this, and now you integrate that into AI, it could be your automation system, right? You could just be telling it to do things.
Yeah.
So I just think it's reimagination. The way to do it now, if you're using, and by the way, we discussed this in the last podcast, the cost of AI is down by 1,000, like 1 by 1,000.
Yeah.
So then it's not Google, Meta, all of these guys at all.
Yep.
It, the tokens are dropping to zero. This will become free like air. Like internet, we pay, but you pay and then you have access. Then you have a serious disruption, yeah, which is why they're also not sitting quiet.
Right.
They're trying to do all of these
themselves.
But I think you take control of your destiny away from Google and Meta by taking control of the customer's utopian experience.
Yeah.
And if the customer is having a utopian experience, that's it. Right.
And hence, can you push yourself really hard to say, rather than GTM, spend X crores in marketing.
Product.
What is the product answer? What is a viral product loop? What is a word of mouth answer?
Yes. It has to be product. Yeah. Because you have one good trip like that.
And then you.
Then you'll post
it. It solves the travel frequency problem, right? Yeah. There's no way I don't come back.
Yeah. Yeah. And I'm giving travel as an example because I know we spend time. Lot of people spend time curating their travel.
Yeah.
Out of which 10 to 15% is enjoyable.
Right.
The rest is not. Oh. Yeah.
Yeah.
So that brings us to the last and equally important chapter of the P&L, which is bottom line. The way we reframed it as, and CV, I'll pick from your book something you said on that panel that stuck with me. Your job as a founder is to ensure that the company survives to live another day. And how does it survive? If it has cash in the bank. So cash is king. How do you control your destiny, your cash? And we talk about return on capital employment. We had a couple of reframes. Number one, how do you keep control on your costs? What we call the kitne aadmi the problem. How do you keep your SG&A, etc. in check? Number two, working capital and how it makes or breaks your business. Avi, you talked about the Kirana business and how that business is just so wonderful only because of that asset turns, right? Like low gross margin, low take rate, and you turn your inventory 20 times and you're king. And number three, sort of unbundling the return on capital employed problem and keeping your company alive. CV, over to you.
I think part of this was cash is king is an adage that everybody knows, but I think we talk about it, but people don't try and live it. It truly is king because every time you raise around, you're sort of diluting yourself.
Yeah.
And you're sort of decreasing value creation for you, your employees, your stakeholders, everyone, right? So cash is truly king. I think the part that, and we've got a chart on this, it's on Pulak Prasad's book where he mentioned about, and you know, you read about ROCE, but how much you really think about ROCE, right? And then there was this session we had for the B2B working team where Ashish came and said, I don't think about EBITDA anymore, I only think about ROCE. And that's when I sort of went into this entire rabbit hole on ROCE and I realized how much, like you could be a positive EBITDA business, but by virtue of us being in a 30% tax economy, your ROCE demands are way higher. Otherwise, you keep raising equity. It's either equity dilution or debt. You pay interest out. Effectively, your money reduces as a founder. So we'll put the chart up, but effectively, how to build towards a right ROCE really early And Avi, I wonder if founders are thinking about this early enough, because they're also trying to, for the company not to die.
They're not. And in fact, Ashish told me directly. He said, "Ek cheez jo aapne nahi jaldi early bola tha, ye Rosi." And he used the word Rosi ne rula diya. Because once you're putting, and he had done a lot of acquisitions, and you know, he was putting it all together, and then you start realizing how many assets you have built. Look, it's a little bit of a tricky one. I would also say my learning is react to market conditions. The ZIRP era, the zero interest rate era, was a very unique era. And one founder told me, ki agar mere ko paisa free mein mil raha hai, toh main kyun nahi kharch karu? Which is also true.
Yeah.
Sometimes that may come back. If you ask me, I have rewired my brain that if ever I see such cheap capital, I should be thinking differently than my usual first principles views.
Mm.
Because if money is being given away, you have to. So I think some of those bad behaviors, ROSI not being important, all of that also came because that era lasted a very long time. It wasn't just post-COVID. It was lasting, leading up to it, many, you know, it was almost 10-year period, right? So I do think founders are not trained to do that. I do think, what can you do early? You said, kitne aadmi the? SG&A, very important, in your control. We discussed gross margin. All these are drivers of ROSI. Gross margin, in your control, early. The other one we didn't talk about, speaking of Google Meta tax. I have said this many times. I don't see it. I still often hear founders doing full root cause analysis of performance and saying, I need to spend more on brand marketing. I'm getting excited listening to all the analysis, and then I say, I'm the wrong answer. Marketing should be money you spend to fuel the fire, not to light the fire. Yeah. Often people use it to light the fire, right? So, agar fire hai, agar aapke cohorts aa rahe hain, all the other building blocks are in place. So, that's a very much a lever you have in control. The other is assets. In some cases, people spend too much early. I don't worry as much about it. The other thing you and I were debating is this, how should you use debt?
Even
I used to, for the longest time, not have a good answer. And venture debt friends, please, I didn't say this. Whether venture debt is a good product or a bad product. Actually, I'm very clear it's not a good product for the company. Debt is not a bad product. Venture debt is a debt on the company. Debt is generally tied to an asset.
Right.
I'm okay with asset-backed debt. So, working capital debt. But aap working capital ko secure karo na.
Right.
Ye kya tax laga rahe ho mere upar, itna bada interest rate, uske upar warrant chahiye, ye wo, whatever, right? So, I do think founders should think of capital structure. You also mentioned somewhere you will dilute so much. Sometimes founders have not thought through the full capital structure. There are various elements, and India hasn't had sophisticated debt markets. Actually, Ashish, again, credit to him. Very early in Oxyzo, they figured out how to, actually maybe in off business also, they started tapping into the debt markets. Mm. They got rated by CRISIL. Mm. So, you know, as you are thinking about this, ultimately, free cash flow is the king, not even ROSI, right?
Yeah.
Free cash flow. Ultimately, things are about that. And I don't think in early stage, founders need to worry about generating free cash flow. I think in early stage, if I were to start again, I would have a clear view of when I would be PAT positive. Probably I would give myself 3 years. And when I would be free cash flow positive. And at that stage, what does each lever of my business model look like in terms of percentages?
Yeah.
And keep working towards
it. I agree.
I think that's the best thing.
And I think just to highlight the points we discussed, I think founders look at receivables and fixed assets a lot, like Avi was mentioning, but I think they don't look enough at payables and inventory.
Yeah.
There's enough things to do and levers to pull on payables and inventory as well. So I'd force some of those discussions slightly earlier. I want to add a last point on what Revant had mentioned, because I had framed this as why you build, and then Revant quickly pushed back and said, I'm not building for EBITDA. I'm building because this is my mission. This is what I'm building for. And I think that's a softer aspect of why you are building, and it's not about the P&L, and it's not about the reframing, and it's about...
So I think you were going to ask this question of what comment stayed with us the most.
Yeah.
You know, I was... Honestly, in the first 5 minutes, I love founders and I generally think I know them. I actually realized that all of them gave a very different answer than what I expected them to.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely.
None of them spoke about market share or whatever. You know, none of them spoke about competition. And for me, the big unlock was they were just all goal backwards.
Yeah.
You know, we talk about what is the difference with founders. Everybody else lives in a world of resource constraints and goals coming out of constraints. Founders think of goals devoid of constraints.
Yeah.
Right. Then they generate constraints and resources. Right?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
What I heard was just unconstrained thinking. I mean, in those first three comments, when you open the session, one after another, I just looked at it and I'm like, very different. And that's what I would encourage founders. And there are so many enablers now. When some of these star founders we spoke to started, I think there were many, many impediments.
Today, if you can find a star founder to grab a coffee with, please have that coffee. They will teach you much more and help you maybe short cycle a couple of years of operating. What stayed with you?
Yeah, I think one thing that Abhiraj talked about, and CV put this question to him saying, how did you manage to just create this new supply or thin air, right? And like he said, just hit and trial. And the point
he actually said, I can give a very smart answer. But it won't be true.
Hit and trial. And then he said, look, when we were starting out, we were really enjoying our highs. And then the lows came and that got us low. But over time, I've learned to sort of constrain myself in a narrow band of emotions. Limit your highs, limit your lows. Your job is just goal backwards, mission backwards, and stay in that range of emotions. I think that stayed with me.
Yeah, that's why we call ourselves Zen.
Yes.
Zen 47.
Zen 47. Yeah.
Absolute narrow band, which is Zen.
Great. We will share all of this material up on our LinkedIn and podcast as well. LinkedIn and articles as well. I think a lot more stuff that we learned. I truly enjoyed this.
Thank you, Kishan. I want everybody listening to this, please post in your comments whether the next one should be started with Kishan singing. And depending on the popular vote, we'll decide. Thank you.
Thank you, everyone.
If you like this episode of Zero to Infinity, there are so many more that you must check out. If you like Indian startup content, hearing about founder journeys, or knowing more about emerging sectors that we're investing in, Zero to Infinity is the channel that you need to subscribe to.